Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, 3, 2, 1. Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On tonight's show, I have two very special guests, people who I've become a fan of. I heard them on the Tinfoil Hat podcast. They have a podcast themselves titled The Propaganda Report, an excellent podcast. I highly recommend people check that out. Their names are Monica Perez and Brad Binkley. And I originally, about a month ago or two, asked them to be on my show and talk about the Mueller report. But there have been so many developments recently with Epstein and all this. We're probably going to cover a few topics. And they were curious about picking my brain about the smiley face killings and my documentary as well. So we're going to cover a few topics. I highly recommend you guys check out their podcast and material. Brad also has a YouTube channel, but they can also promote their show a little bit more in just a sec. So Monica and Brad, are you there?
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you for agreeing to the interview. I'm glad that this is taking place. For people who don't know your name or your podcast, can you guys talk a little bit about your background and how you became interested and what your approach is? Like, I really loved your approach about identifying, analyzing, and critically assessing talking points and propaganda in media and all types of media, whether it's corporate media, political statements, or things in court. So if you can talk a little bit about that as well, that'd be great.
Monica? All right, should I kick it off? Yeah, I have a terrestrial radio show on WSB in Atlanta. It's a call-in show Saturday afternoons if people want to listen on iHeartRadio and actually get on the show. It's got a good listenership. It's very mainstream audience, so it's interesting. And over doing that for a while, Binkley was a listener and a local talent, and he called me. Emailed me and we got together. He's now, he produces my radio show. And then we also decided to do a podcast once a week. So you, if you want to just listen to that WSB show, you can listen to it on Wednesdays. We post it on thepropreport.com. But on Thursdays, our podcast, which we co-host, is The Propaganda Report. And we both talk about basically the stories that are in the news, but peeling away the propaganda and the agenda elements of it and just telling you why it's important, because it's not there if it isn't meant to influence you or institute a policy or engineer society. And then we do those and we continue to do those, but we found a real need for a kind of daily approach. You hear a lot of, we work at this mainstream terrestrial radio station, and you get that people will listen just for the news, but wouldn't it be nice to have news from a perspective of truth and liberty and individual justice, that kind of a perspective without all the propaganda? And so we have now committed to doing that every single day by drive time. So we put out 30 minutes of news without the propaganda, without the BS, called Drive Time Prop, Your Drive Time Prop, which we put out by 4 o'clock Eastern every day, every weekday. And you can get that, all of that, at thepropreport.com. It's a lot of stuff, but there's so much material. It never stops coming. So we decided to analyze it and share it as much as we possibly can.
There's an unbelievable amount of propaganda. And you asked about approach. My approach is I just always try to ask, why are they showing it to us? What impact are they trying to have on their audience? And what actions are they trying to compel? What thoughts and actions are they trying to compel people to do. I think about it from a propaganda aspect. I've studied a lot of Edward Bernays and a lot of old propaganda, communist propaganda. I just kind of try to analyze it through that filter.
And I mean, I appreciate that because some of these people are not calling what these political parties are saying propaganda or like you actually use the term mind control, Brad, which, you know, I think is really true. I think they're really trying to shape and control their audience, their group or whatever. So maybe the best thing to talk about is Epstein. What are you guys' thoughts about Epstein and the reporting and what, you know, people want to know? Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
You can launch that one, Binkley.
That is – Monica nailed this. We both hovered around this right when it came out. Monica, she nailed it, I think, more dead on, is that the issue is to put conspiracy theories up in the news because they're demonizing conspiracy theories right now. And right before that happened, the FBI had labeled conspiracy theories as a domestic terrorist group. And then they baited everybody with this Epstein story. It was automatically as this Trump body count, Clinton body count, this competing kind of dialectic. And I think that personally, I don't know if he's dead. I don't know if he's alive. I don't know if he's a witness protection. I don't know what happened. I think the impact of this is going to be more about how they are taking control over the information and demonizing conspiracy theorists.
And it's a beautiful way to keep you from actually pulling on any real thread. I mean, it's almost like they preemptively flooded the market with disinformation. And what Cass Sunstein in his famous memo, Conspiracy Theory, called counter misinformation, which isn't truth at all. I mean, they don't even pretend that it's truth, but they got ahead of this Epstein thing so that they made the conspiracy theories themselves the story. And obviously, there's nonsense going on. There's no narrative here isn't a sign that the Epstein story is terribly scandalous. Justice won't be done. People are getting away with probably murder, not just Epstein, but other people are dead. Then all we're going to talk about, all we're going to do is argue about the details of which conspiracy without being like, it doesn't matter. This is awful. Like, this is what we've come to. There's no justice. There's no truth.
I believe we pulled 6 stories the day after Epstein died that were specifically focused on how terrible the conspiracy theories have taken over. And it's just, and they relate it to Trump, and they basically make it, if you're a conspiracy theorist, you're a white nationalist at this point.
Right. Interesting. Like, that's the new term, right? White supremacist.
Yeah.
And so we got off of the racist to the white supremacist.
Which I feel like they finally brought identity politics to the right. I mean, it took them like half a century, right. But they finally figured out a way to do it.
And, I mean, what do you think this reporting will be? Will it always just be demonizing people who do not accept the standard statements that Epstein commits suicide, that was the predicate, was this FBI? Do you think that the FBI statement was intentionally dropped before Epstein died? Does that make sense?
No, I think what they're doing.
You mean the stuff about the, go ahead, Monica.
They're just trying to chill. I know for the conspiracy theory stuff, for me, it's they're trying to chill people. They're trying to put people in jail. They're trying to button up all questioning of official narratives, not about Epstein necessarily, but about anything. Generally, either like they're switching to domestic terrorism, so they're trying to keep us from defending our rights, our constitutional rights, their background checks, red flag laws, even to the extent that we may be marching to an unjustified foreign war. Binkley nailed that a long time ago. They need to shut people up who do not believe the official narrative. I call it unpatriotic facts. They are not allowed. And this I think the Epstein is just a vehicle for them to launch a broader attack on people who question authorities, news, mainstream media. I think the Epstein thing is just, they usually multitask. Like if you read the report from Iron Mountain, they talk about they multitask in PSYOP, psychological operations. So the Epstein thing is multitask on many, many levels. And I think the conspiracy, it is part of the conspiracy theory attack, which is a larger operation.
Yeah, Bernays talks about multitasking too, a multifaceted approach to propaganda. Prior to World War II and World War I, similar patterns happened where any information that could not be controlled, they tried to wrangle it in or they tried to discredit it. And then the whole process was they would demonize somebody and any information that did not fit into the narrative. Like, you could be on the left or you could be on the right. That's fine. You could be on one of those competing sides, but you could not question the basic assumptions. And once you start questioning the basic assumptions, that's the stuff they don't like. And that's the stuff that they want to silence. And they've folded in Russia into this story as well. Russia, they're blaming anybody who tweets out the hashtag Clinton body count is spreading Russian propaganda. That's what they say, which is a ridiculous thing. It's absolutely ridiculous to say that. Clinton body count's been around for a long, long time. So they're demonizing Russia. They're trying to silence people who ask questions. It's not necessarily the left or the right. It's people who ask questions, and I think they're doing it, like Monica said, to control the information leading up to probably some sort of foreign war here in the next few years.
Fascinating. I mean, that is the intent. Iran is the last kind of target in the Middle East. So, you know.
But it's a big one.
It's a big one, yeah.
You're not going to be able to button that up easily. I mean, they struggled with Syria. They're not, you know, I don't know how they're.
Well, so this process is actually, according to you, Brad, it's been taking place all the way back to Bernays. Was what, 1930s, 1940s?
1917, 1918.
Wow. Okay. So that early. So yeah. Was Bernays active in World War One?
Bernays was. That's when he got his start. Is in the Committee on Public Information, the United States' first mass scale organized propaganda machine. So yeah, he was young then. He was in. He was a propagandist for the government and for big business for 80 years.
Wow, that's amazing. And he was the nephew of Freud, too, right? Wasn't he a relative? Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. He used Freud's theories, and that's how he kind of got himself into circles, as he leveraged that. Hi, I'm Freud's nephew, Edward Bernays.
Fascinating. What was this famous book that he wrote?
Propaganda.
Propaganda was it. That's it. There you go. So the Propaganda Report.
He also wrote one called The Engineering of Consent, which is basically just like a blueprint for the propaganda model that we see today.
And so Epstein should be seen or can be perceived in this kind of larger agenda to really kind of take any type of dissenting voices out. And I actually kind of see that happening in YouTube as well, where people are getting demonetized en masse and only authorized news media entities are being pushed. Have you guys noticed that?
Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Yes. We were talking about that earlier today, weren't we?
Yeah, we're victims of that.
That's interesting. So you guys have a YouTube presence, is that correct?
I stopped posting to YouTube because right after Parkland, we did a show on WSB, which is the regular airwaves, an FCC-regulated station, and they took it down and they gave me a strike because they said I was bullying Sheriff Israel, who's an elected official, you know? Wow. I mean, that's what freedom of speech is. And they said, and Google is a Defense Department operation, so don't tell me it's a private company. And they took me down and would not tell me what the strike was for, and they wouldn't revisit it. And if you get three strikes, you're kind of gone forever. And I didn't want to jeopardize. So I completely capitulated and switched it to making craft cocktail videos. So
that's a good option. Probably
help. Demonetized.
Yeah, that's the kind of corrupting the youth that they're okay with.
Interesting. So,
but
you can make drinks, right?
Which is,
yeah, as soon as I put videos up there, the monetization is minimized. And speaking to what you said a moment ago, that giving the mainstream media stuff, yeah, we pulled a news story for our show yesterday that the story was about how the beneficiaries of conspiracy theorists getting kind of booted off of YouTube was that Fox News and other mainstream outlets are getting all of that traffic. So, like, exactly what you said is exactly what's happening, and it's all part of what's called the Google News Initiative, which is this basically worldwide effort of Google to control the information by funding all of these initiatives of the outlets they can control. So the mainstream outlets and then the local outlets that are basically fronts for the mainstream outlets, they get them to where they all show up in the search rankings. They show up at the top, and they train them, and they fund them, and they squeeze everybody else out by doing that.
It's really fascinating, too, because they took a huge hit in valuation, like a $70 billion hit just from YouTube in changes after they changed an algorithm. Do you guys know about that story? And well, Jiki kept her,
I do not.
And she kept her job. So a business actually took a huge financial hit after making these algorithm changes. And
Yeah, I seem to recall, is that when they brought on like tens of thousands of censors around that time?
Yeah, because they demonetized a whole bunch of stuff. So all of these places that they, because they're, when they demonetize a content creator, they're not able to, they're not selling their ads, right? So they contracted their own base. And one of the oddities of their decision is that people went to YouTube because it's not the mainstream media. It's not the corporate media. So they're actually moving against, people went there to see unique, you know, bizarre type videos, and they don't, you know, people wanted to ask questions. So now,
and the ads were disconnected. Absolutely nobody held the advertiser responsible for the content because they knew that's not how the model worked.
Right. That's true.
And they're blaming the advertisers, but it's not believable.
Well, there was, I mean, what did they call it? The ad apocalypse or whatever, but it was really based upon very few complaints. It seemed like there were very few complaints, and then they contracted all the advertising. But it's part of this larger agenda, I think, that you guys are really keyed into, where you're only going to get, you know, one of the six main corporate bodies, whether it's Microsoft, Disney. They're going to tell you what to believe.
And if they were really after stuff that would upset an advertiser or stuff that's really bad for vulnerable listeners, watchers, viewers, they would make it possible. And I will tell you, I have three kids. They're teenagers, young teenagers. One of them has Down syndrome. And I have tried everything I could to control what they see on YouTube. And the themes are so dark that I mean, it's just, it's their terrible themes to the point where, like, my son's special needs class, they ban YouTube. Wow, they don't allow it. They tell the parents, don't let your kids watch YouTube. My son, there's like one channel that he tries to avoid, and he says, I just try to watch My Little Pony, and it keeps, you know, there's like the dark side of My Little Pony, and, you know, it has really bad things. And he said, I keep canceling it, and it keeps coming back. So if they really wanted to fix this stuff, they could. And I think it's actually the opposite. I think they make it so it does go into that more addictive, darker place for kids, but not for political free speech. So I don't buy their line at all.
I don't either. I totally agree with you. Yeah, it's pretty incredible because kids can still access really dark stuff. There's all kinds of pedophile
themes. All they have to do is rate it. You know, all they'd have to do is rate it like TV and movies are. It's not that hard. It's much harder to figure out that I'm bullying an elected official in real time. I mean, how are they pulling that down immediately?
Yeah,
it's so well, the kids chance, figure out you know? Ways around all of that stuff from what I've learned.
Yeah, but YouTube doesn't have to. Are they finding a way to watch my video that was taken down?
Aren't these changes going to just make people rely less on these formerly acceptable to kind of fringe ideas? People are going to go even farther fringe to BitChute or alternate tech? Isn't that really
I think that stuff's a setup. I think that they deliberately put the really extreme stuff in there because they want to, it's like a honeypot. You know, they actually create conspiracy theories that are just bottomless pits. They put a lot of material in it to divert you into these sections of the maze that's never going to get you to the end.
Interesting.
Wait, so you mean people going over to BitChute like Nazi channels and stuff
right,
like that?
Have you seen the Adam Waffen videos on BitChute? I mean, it's like super
there's
hard.
There's some crazy videos on BitChute. Yeah, and crazy. I think people who do the extreme radical stuff are going to end up on some of those platforms. I have stuff on BitChute. I hadn't looked at my page in a while. I looked at it the other day, and I was like, I was surprised at the amount of views that I had gotten. It's not like a lot, but it was more than I had expected. But looking around on the site is I mean, it's extreme as soon as you get there. So,
well, Binkley, didn't we find that? I wish I had my finger on this evidence right now, but there was a British company that was making, a British company that was making radical Islamic videos for YouTube for the Middle East, and they were doing it on behalf of military intelligence, who, when they were caught, later claimed that we were doing that to monitor how it infiltrated the system, and then the company that created it said we didn't have any monitors on it whatsoever. We were just releasing it. We weren't tracking it. There was no research involved.
Yeah,
and they were making them. That's why I think that they're doing the exact same thing. If you look at the Defense Department has this analysis on memetics, on memes, and it says that they use it to enhance dysfunctional subcultures. They say they only use them abroad, but I think there's evidence, plenty of evidence, that they use the same tactics here at home as they use abroad, and that's what they're trying to do openly by classifying white nationalism and lumping it with conspiracy theories and saying that that stuff is domestic terrorism and should be exempt from the civil liberties that are assured by the Bill of Rights.
Yeah,
that's what makes me nervous. And so that's the kind of stuff that then they can use these tactics like a FISA court or propagandizing or radicalizing or enhancing dysfunctional subcultures to entrap people. But what they really do is prey on the vulnerably mentally vulnerable and make things worse so they can have their strategy of terror.
And that's what we did in World War One. Is leading up to World War One. The British were propagandizing us. They had the most sophisticated propaganda operation, and they were propagandizing us to get us into World War One. Their correspondence they wrote between a guy named Sir Gilbert Parker, who was the main guy over here for the British, back and forth with a guy named Lord Wellington.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
At the Wellington House, and they talk about how gullible the Americans were for buying into everything they were doing, but the way that they inoculated us from seeing it was that they told us that everything that we saw was German propaganda, because Germans were terrible at propaganda in World War One. World War Two, they were good at it. World War One, they were terrible at it, and since they were terrible at it, it was easy to spot, and so everything that they did not – any inconvenient truth – unpatriotic facts, they would just say, oh, that's evil German propaganda. Meanwhile, the British are subtly manipulating us into a war that the country didn't want to go to. We were neutral before that.
Right. It's fascinating you say that, because I did a lot of Crowley research, and he was actually involved as a British agent in New York writing ridiculous German propaganda to do just that. So he's probably one of these guys' assets writing for the Fatherland, writing for the New York Times. I mean, so it's pretty amazing that you.
Yeah, that's similar to what Monica just said. It's putting somebody up there to say stuff, to pretend to be German, or to pretend to be the left, or to pretend to be the right, and write bad propaganda.
Right. Well, he said, what did he say? He left. Crowley left the U.S. after the sinking of the Lusitania, which he came to the U.S. on. But he said, my work was done once the war started. I was done, and that's why he left, because he was not an MI6, MI5. He was actually a precursor called the Special Intelligence Service. But he said that, he wrote in his confessions, he said, I was a propagandist who engaged in ridiculous things. And he was actually did these pro-Irish things as a German citizen. But then there was a book by Secret Agent 666 where the U.S. government knew full well that he was a British agent working under the aegis of their intelligence agency, engaged in propaganda. It's incredible.
So is occultism not real? Is that what you're saying? That he is a fraud from top to bottom?
We can get into that argument, because some people think that his occultism was a front for his intelligence activity. Or was it the inverse?
Right.
Is that he was an occultist, and intelligence was very easy for him because he had a very fluid moral code or moral
sense. I'll have to set aside a couple of hours to talk about that. I was reading about Jack Parsons recently, and just, oh my gosh, I want
But it's interesting to look all the way. I mean, I'm glad you went all the way back to World War One, Brad, because this stuff is happening. Public manipulation, fake things, and we really don't know how many of these shooters or people went crazy were due to propaganda that was created by our own government, right?
Well, yeah,
we don't know what they're reading. I don't
know. They act like it's unreasonable to question whether something happened, yet they tell us deepfakes are going to, we're never going to know what a video is real or not because of deepfake. And then we go back throughout history. There's a story called, there's a book called Falsehoods in Wartime. It was written shortly after World War One, and it just documents all of the lies that were told, all the things that were staged and that were faked. Edward Bernays writes in one of his books, I think it's Public Opinion, and he writes about how the public believed the sensational lies they made up and the stories that they told and how they recycled old stories from back in the 1700s, and they would put them in newspapers, and how they would change the headlines of that were under the captions underneath pictures to completely different stories to make them out to be tragedies when they weren't that at all. So they've been making stuff up. They've been using atrocity propaganda for centuries, yet they try and convince us that even questioning whether or not something real is like immoral or wrong.
Interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, you can take it all the way to this whole Russia hoax, and even the foundations of this Mueller report are based upon hysteria and kind of fact-free propagandizing that really took hold all over. Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, the most important thing I felt about the Mueller report, I mean, it's all I really needed to see was these, I think they're called 302 reports. Did you happen to catch that, William?
Tell me.
Talking about, so if you look at, I just read the Mueller report and I noticed that it just had a different style from the Ken Starr, you could get into that Ken Starr, Whitewater, and the Clinton stuff, Monica Lewinsky, totally different subject. But just as far as
reading, these kind of independent counsel things are very interesting. But please continue.
Yeah. So, but just even reading the report, I was reading the Mueller report, and I'm thinking, well, where is the evidence? I'm a big fan of footnotes and stuff, and I went back to the Ken Starr report, and when they talked about Linda Tripp, they would talk about her testifying. She testified that blah, blah, blah. But it didn't say that with the Mueller report. It's actually written like a narrative. So I went and looked at the footnotes. I'm like, how am I supposed to believe any of this stuff? And what they were these 302 reports, which is, and I looked into that, and that's a very controversial method. It's common. It's everywhere, but it's controversial, and this is why. An FBI agent can have a conversation with you, and at any point, like even up to several months later, write up a 302 of the conversation. I think it's 302 and not 320. I'm almost positive.
No, 302. 302. But you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So he can write up this account of the conversation, which may or may not be a true reflection of what you said. And it's even been problematic because people will be in a jury situation. Somebody will be a witness testifying at a trial. And they'll testify, and then the 302 report will be produced and say, why did you say this to this FBI agent? And they'll say, well, I didn't say that. So it says right here, you said it. So then it creates a real problem in court because the witness is like, I did not say that. And they're like, it's right here. It's like Comey writing in his notebook outside.
Right.
So it's actually double hearsay on people who have political agendas and conflicts of interest. So you have somebody saying that they heard Trump say something, and then you have this FBI agent scribbling it down on the back of a matchbook and typing it up, and then see, so you know what I mean? So it's the FBI agent saying that Chris Christie said that Donald Trump said this thing. That to me was, I would just roughly say, if you could even eyeball the footnotes, at least in the second half of the Mueller report, which is what I focused on, I would say 80% of them is just 302.
God, it's just incredible. The whole thing
is
a total
yeah.
joke. I mean, it's
and then the other 20% is news reports.
Right, but some of them,
and they're all anonymously sourced as well. And that's the mind control
I
aspect.
Know, but I mean,
but didn't they get busted?
The FBI
didn't they get busted planting their own news sources and then relying
right.
on them? So
yes,
it's just incredible. The Mueller report's incredible. Yeah. If you know the Starr report, Kavanaugh worked on the Starr report and did all the footnotes. So all
William,
those
it backs up that Kavanaugh thing. Miguel Rodriguez wrote how the Vince Foster murder the Vince Foster investigation was a suicide, was baloney, and he resigned
right.
and yielded to, he wrote that, his memo to Kavanaugh.
Oh, interesting.
Who then covered it up.
Well,
and
I don't
Vince
know if
the Foster
you,
thing well. Is one of the, they're doing this thing now over the past couple of days where all the left-wing news outlets will say Trump's spouting off dangerous conspiracy theories again, and they'll put a big list up on the screen. And there's been an article in the New York Times, I think the Washington Post also, that's also had a big long list of the crazy conspiracy theories that Trump has promoted. And one of them is Vince Foster was killed by the Clintons. And it's all a bunch of conspiracies that, like, I would say probably 70% of them are not crazy at all.
Crazy at all. Well, I don't know if you guys know this, but I was in D.C. at the time, and I worked for the lawyer who did an addendum to the Star Report. His name was John Clark, and I sat down with Patrick Knowlton. I knew Patrick Knowlton face-to-face, who was the witness at Fort Marcy Park, who saw something that the FBI was... I've done interviews on that, but...
Wow!
Yeah, no, so I knew all those guys. I actually delivered... If you look up the Star Report, okay, so what happened? The Star Report went, and it went to the District Court of D.C., which is a springboard to the Supreme Court. That's where Kavanaugh made his way to. That's the federal three-man judge court. When they reviewed, I think it was something having to do with Star, they added the Clark addendum. You can look it up online. It's still there. Clark's still around. Ed Opperman interviewed Clark and Knowlton twice. And I knew that. I mean, I can tell you stories that would blow your mind. So... I was the one who delivered that to all members of Congress. So it was both the senatorial offices and the congressional offices. I handed those things to people like Levin. I handed it to Arlen Specter's office. All these people, everybody at that time, that was 1996 or seven. So I know the Vince Foster murder
That that was the smoking gun, those guys, and they said later that they were disrespected and abused.
Oh, no, there were guys who followed Knowlton around with black briefcases and intimidated him. They wanted him to know they were taking pictures of him. So they were intimidated. I mean, yeah. He had the pictures.
They said in the Epstein case.
Well, the thing is that's not public information. That's not something Knowlton wants to tell the public. That's true, though, because I saw it firsthand. If you walk, all you have to do to look at the Vince Foster report is walk out to Fort Marcy Park. Fort Marcy Park got its name because it was a Civil War fort, and it was, they used to make these forts out of tree stumps or whatever, like fallen trees. And so it's a big thing.
Wow.
And he was in a position that nobody could ever have done what he did to do. It was on the other side of a berm. It just, the whole thing is, just, and it was all shaped.
The description of the car and stuff was.
The gun is in his hand. He's a left-handed right hand. When anybody shoots himself, the gun flies off about 4 feet. That's your standard when they find a body. The whole thing was, it looked like somebody was trying to set up a Hollywood style death, like somebody who didn't know forensics or anything. It just
Knowlton?
Yeah, Patrick Knowlton.
Is he related to Hill and Knowlton, the PR firm?
No, not at all. Okay. He actually was in the same apartment complex as Clark. I licked all those stamps and envelopes and everything that went to Congress. I was the one who did all the, I was just a simple clerk, legal clerk. I was just totally naive.
Fascinating.
No, it's an amazing story. So that was really one of their first hits. That was it. They probably lured him out, and it goes back. I did a couple shows on Vince Foster before the 2016 election. So, he must have known something about Whitewater and all these things. And I actually mentioned McDougal in a conversation I had with Roberta Glass just earlier thing, because one of the early Clinton body count deaths was a guy by the name of Jim McDougal, who was known Whitewater, kind of a financier out of, I think he was the Arkansas Development Fund, AIDFA. And he was in jail, and literally people said a helicopter flew in, people got out, walked into the jail cell, he was dead of a heart attack, and they just left. And so, something like that could have happened to Epstein. So
yeah, it definitely could have.
Yeah, so anyway, don't tell Vince Foster and all those things. The footnotes done by Kavanaugh revealed, if you want to get into the footnotes, Monica, read the footnotes of the Star Report.
I love footnotes. That's where all the meat is.
It is. Well, so Kavanaugh.
But the Kavanaugh thing
it's a personal thing. When they went after Kavanaugh, it was personal because he put all of Bill Clinton's sexual peccadilloes in the footnotes, the seven girlfriends he had.
I would peel it further and say that stuff was a distraction from what really went on, like the Barry and the boys stuff, Barry Seal stuff.
Yeah. There's all, yeah. it just gets, you get into the mercury underworld.
Dude, that
the thing about Mena and Barry is that he was one of many. Do you think that was one minor transshipment point?
Right.
That stuff's happening. And people say, oh my God, this small airport is corrupt. How do you think tons of cocaine are coming into the United States? Through LAX or something? They're smaller airports, man. Oh, yeah. So anyway, you don't get me started.
We were talking earlier about how they presented this prison in the news as though it were stellar and had a great reputation, and they were just shocked that there could have been some, some bad stuff going on, that it's just incompetence. When that's not true, there's been corruption at this prison forever, really.
A lot of prisons are very corrupt, you know?
Oh,
and I mean,
gosh.
The thing is you can, if you have unlimited funds, everybody has a number and anything can happen. And Epstein was in jail. He was arrested for July 6th. And died. So there was a month for people to just figure things out, man.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's these stories are super conflicting, and that's very telling in itself.
Clearly something's up, right? I mean, even if you say that he committed suicide in that place and he wasn't on suicide watch, right? That already is just a level of that's not right. And it's beyond incompetent. It's just there's something wrong. So you know there is something wrong.
Right.
And then they've spoon-fed us numerous complicated conspiracy theories. I'm on Twitter. Everybody's tweeting at me their different ideas. And I'm saying, I'm not getting stuck in the quicksand of the conspiracy theory. And they'll say, but this is the one. This is the truth.
This is exactly what happened, right?
Never going to know.
Well, I told Roberta Glass, it's like Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express. It's not who did it, but everybody probably wanted it done. There's tons of names involved that never came out. Bill Mayer, all these people are affiliated with these guys and going to that island. Imagine how many people needed him to go away.
We've talked about this a lot on our show, that the plea negotiation letter that nobody ever talks about because they didn't want to make it a Clinton scandal, the names on the plea negotiation letter, which are the people vouching for him that helped him get that sweetheart deal, that's what really helped him get that sweetheart deal. Alexander Acosta was a small player.
Right.
The names on that are the Rockefeller Foundation, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, and it cites Epstein as being one of the members who conceived of the Clinton Global Initiative, and it cites his friendship with Bill Clinton.
Right. Yeah, so it goes to the top and all these very powerful foundations. Did you ever read that he was an informant for Mueller?
I did see that.
Yeah, so that's another thing. So it's like Mueller's tied in. It's the Bush, right? So it was under the Bush administration. So why did this kind of lenient thing happen? I feel sorry for Acosta in a way, because I feel like he was just probably told what to do.
That's Binkley's view. I think they were all kind of, I don't think he had much of a choice, but the Florida cops were they were horrified that this happened. They said they never saw so much evidence in their lives in ever any case, and they could and they had so many victims and physical evidence, everything. They were really pissed. Now the guy who was the most pissed happened to die at the age of 50 not too long ago.
I remember that.
I think I do think that the Epstein case points out something that I almost even wonder is really real, but then I do think it's real. It's the three-dimensional chess thing. It's where he, don't forget who his handler or procurer or whatever was, is Ghislaine Maxwell,
right,
whose father, Maxwell, also, I was listening to 21st Century Wire, and they pointed this out. I can't believe I didn't, like, snap to that. Her father also supposedly suicided himself when scandal was descending upon him, but he was supposedly a Mossad super spy, which is what they say about Epstein, that they were getting to these Americans or high-level UK or whatever as a way of getting, debriefing them, blackmailing them, whatever, because at whatever level they were operating, there was factionalization. And Wexner, I don't know what his story is, but he, you know, all roads lead to Wexner.
Right. Well, he's the one who actually deeds a $70 million mansion, yes, to a guy without being paid. How does that happen?
And then it was in the paper that he had something to do with his brother, Mark Epstein, right, having what's probably a $20 million or many times that, a 16-story apartment building in New York. Wexner, yeah, was behind every rock of Epstein's alleged wealth, and there, right, and there was nobody else.
Well, no, people, like, he's kind of like a mystery player on the financial part of New York because nobody can really find anybody other than
just
Wexner.
Wexner.
Yes.
Right. Right.
So exactly. how does this guy come out? I mean, there's been other people have flat
he's
out.
He's a front.
Yeah, he's a front.
Seems like to
I mean, there's so many stories about the blackmailing things going on. So, you know, nobody likes to get blackmailed. That's what I told somebody else. If he had blackmail material on people are angry. Can you imagine some of these guys who are blackmailed in the 2,000-page filing? There was a billionaire, I can't remember his name offhand, but can you imagine having to sit down at the table with your wife and your kids and explain why you're in the news? People will pay $5 million, $10 million, nothing. That's nothing to those guys. The guy worth $2 billion?
Even, I mean, if you're talking about people in the government, you really don't have to pay anything.
Right. I mean, so, yeah. So there are a lot of people sweating and a lot of people breathing sighs of relief that Epstein's dead. But I wouldn't be surprised if more cover-up stuff happens. More strange things, more weird fires.
I think that this is just the beginning, and who knows about what will come out about his estate, how the other girls, the people, the witnesses, the victims will be disgraced. I mean, I hope that at least they're paid off. I would rather them just take the money and walk away because they're not going to win in the court of public opinion. That Brad Edwards, the lawyer, I wish him well, but I would love to talk to him, see what the plan is.
Right.
But something I found interesting in parallel with the smiley face killer stuff that you have done so much work on is that it seemed to me like uniquely straight guys who like young girls, not necessarily fetish stuff, not gay stuff, not pedophilia. They call it pedophilia. It's not pedophilia. It's statutorily underage girls, but post pubescent, which I think is I just feel like that's something, you know, it's not the same as like that. I don't know if you're familiar, William, with the 140 UK dossiers of politicians in the Thatcher era that disappeared they were pedophiles and pederasts.
Yeah.
Remember that? That story? Very. Yes, huh?
After Jimmy Savile died, right?
No, it was way before that.
Oh, it was before Jimmy Savile.
Yes. I mean, I'm not saying it's not related, but it was a fantastic scandal and it just was totally underreported. But I feel like, and the Franklin cover up, I mean, I feel like there's almost like different classifications, but he seemed to have just gone for the straight guys like
right him. And people don't believe it happens unless it's in a Catholic church. Yeah, it's been happening. If you read Plato, like, it's the most unbelievable mind expanding thing.
What about the Boy
at one
Scouts?
Moment then yeah. But then like right after that it's like there's pedophilia in these ancient Greek philosophy. It's so they
and the Boy Scouts just had it was like the buried in the newspaper. Boy Scouts had this huge scandal and I mean I don't know if it has to do with their changing policies to be more progressive or whatever, that they want to bury it because part of social engineering is to not really openly look at some of these things, but they don't treat it like, you're right, the Catholic Church. I mean, it's just, it's the stuff that rises to the level of media attention always is first curated by what the agenda is.
Right. I just wanted to go back to Robert Maxwell. The book is Assassination of Robert Maxwell, Israel Super Spy, by Gordon Thomas and Martin Dillon. So Martin Dillon, when they published that book, guess who savaged the book in, I think, the New York Times in 2002? Guess who was the writer who attacked the book?
Alan Dershowitz.
Yes, perfect. How did you know that?
I'm so good.
So good. So you got to look that up. So anyway, look on my website because I'm about to upload an article that Martin Dillon.
I was going
to
say Michael Wolff.
No, that was good. Close.
That's the one
close.
I was thinking.
Yeah, close,
is Michael Wolff.
Close second. But I'm going to upload something from Martin Dillon because he almost wrote a book about Epstein back in 2010. So the same guy who wrote about.
Bring it, Martin.
Pardon me?
I want Martin to write that book.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen, but I would suspect there'll be 5 books to come out within the next 6 months. But did you know that Ghislaine had a sister, Isabel, who's in San Francisco?
No.
Yeah, so she's got other relatives somewhere around the U.S.
Do you think that they will ever find her? Not her sister, but Maxwell?
I don't know.
Is she
I don't
on
think
the run?
So. If she's smart, she's not going to. They're probably trying to find her and file against
she's
her.
She's the one they're looking for right now.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. There is no Mark Epstein and there is no Isabel Maxwell. Maybe these people are now living those lives.
As their brother and sister?
All of a sudden, all of a sudden the siblings emerge.
Yeah, interesting point. Well, I read somewhere that Mark Epstein is the beneficiary of his brother's, whatever's remaining of his brother's $550 million, which nobody knows where that came from.
I think it'll be interesting how the finances get just ignored or covered up. Yep. I mean,
how's that work? You inherit a sex island?
Yeah.
Sex island? I mean, well, did you know that Epstein bought another island other than that one? That there was a recent acquisition?
That, yeah.
There's so
but
many
sketches. It's all Wexner's, right? No?
I don't know. But, either. You know, he was down to one plane. But if you look at, there was a public, Bradley Edwards did a public kind of video where he had all of what Epstein owned. And there's like helicopters, planes, tons of boats. I mean, it's like a villain, like some kind of supervillain.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
And there's no trace of where it came from, like the SEC filings and all that, which is makes no sense.
Do you know what's other? The Castle
document.
Let's see
his tax returns.
Yeah, let's see his tax returns. That'll be interesting. But do you know that Epstein was going to, in one of his routes, his international routes, that he was going to Tangier in Morocco?
No.
Yeah, so no. In the Castle filings, there's a map of all these places where they knew Castle was like one of the big guys other than Boys. Boys Flexner. Boys was involved in busing Avenatti, who tried to threaten Boys with criminal prosecution over the whole Nike transaction, which is a total joke. Avenatti's just, I mean, I don't want to get into that. Anyway.
Binkley loves to pull the thread on Avenatti.
Well, so he threatened Boys with criminal prosecution, which is illegal, and then he left, and then Boys invited him back to threaten him again, which was the FBI was there to record him. So Avenatti walked right back into the mousetrap and said the same stuff like an idiot. I mean, it's just incredible. Anyway, I'll send you the Castle maps, but he's stopping in Tangier. So there's an element there. There may be more. They may not all be little girls, because Northern Africa is a known place to find little boys.
That made sense, because I don't feel like he's one of a group of guys in charge of luring in people of one predilection or another. I feel like he is working for a competing entity at that level, and it would make sense if he had a variety of products.
Did you hear that Roberts said that both Ghislaine and Jeffrey Epstein wanted her to have a baby, and that she would be the they would take care of the baby, and they would pay her $200,000 a month, no questions asked, but they would be the parents.
Who did they want to have the baby?
The one of the primary accusers, Virginia Roberts Giuffre.
You know, I'd heard that he wanted to seed an entire island.
That just seems like baloney.
Well, she actually said it, so I don't know. I mean,
oh, Robert said it. No, I mean the seeding the island thing. I thought was right.
Well. I think he was into transhumanism. I mean, the guy's connected.
Are you sure? When did that first emerge?
That story was that he wanted to have 20 women. He wanted to have like a little baby factory.
When did you first read that story? This stuff is too new for me to.
It's there.
I read it recently, but I'm just saying Binkley and I have been looking at this guy for years now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we would have these things that are coming out now, unless they were in the unsealed documents. I want to see like the first reference to it, because I feel like there's a lot of misinformation and counter misinformation being released into the echo chamber.
This is from The Guardian, August 1st, 2019. Epstein reportedly hoped to develop super race of humans with his DNA.
But where is their source is my question.
According
to
the New York Times, aftermath of his 2008 sex trafficking conviction, hoped to see the human race. The newspaper reported in a major investigation. So it's from the New York Times.
Yeah, but they're not given a source. And I have to say, like, I'm super skeptical.
Okay, well, you can be skeptical of that. But the guy who wrote it is James B. Stewart, who's a very legit journalist who's going to write a book about the whole Mueller report. It's coming out in January.
Yeah, I'm not impugning him. I'm just saying that if his source is the New York Times or whatever, I certainly am not taking that to the bank.
That's true.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, we're at 47 minutes. Do you want to ask me some questions about the smiley face killers? Anything specific? Anything you want to know?
I did have like a couple of questions that I wanted to, that like I was left saying, well, but maybe, you know, so I'm going to, but maybe you, but even though I'm not as skeptical, I just would like the clarity that, so the smiley face killer documentary, you showed that they're all males who were missing and then found dead in water.
Correct.
And it's a pattern that was overlooked a lot of times because it happened in so many different jurisdictions.
Correct.
So there's a couple of points of clarity and then a couple of, but what if? So the number one question I had is, the majority of these deaths still considered accidents to your knowledge?
Correct. That's correct. Most, okay. But they're slowly changing. There's been a few that have changed. So Dakota James in Pittsburgh, Christopher Jenkins in Minneapolis, the police chief changed the designation. And to the credit of the police in Columbus, Ohio, the Joey LaBute was actually not caused an accident. It was an unknown cause of death. So they are upgrading. And the FBI and the Secret Service were involved in Dakota James's when the mom went to go talk to the cops there. So there is a federal involvement when some of these bodies more recently are being found. The FBI is involved, and I say that to their credit.
Yeah, it's basically the only justification I can think of for federal police force or involvement in police activity at the federal level.
But there may be a time
for people who aren't familiar with it. Why is it called the Smiley Face Killers?
So it got its name. So it became known as the Smiley Face Killers because there were two people primarily involved who did an excellent 6-part series on the Oxygen Channel that came out this year about the Smiley Face Killers, which I highly recommend people watch. There are two. One is Jeff Gannon, and he had his detective partner was named Anthony Duarte in New York City. And another guy whose name was Gilbertson, who was in Minnesota, both saw the same pattern of young men disappearing and being found in water. And the first case was a McNeil guy in New York City. And Gilbertson saw the same thing happening in college towns where guys would be out at night drinking and then disappear only to be found in water later. So they got in touch with each other independently. So Gilbertson reached out to Gannon, and they wrote a book called Case Studies in Drowning Forensics. And Gilbertson is a trained criminologist, so they took a very detailed analysis. But it got its name, the Smiley Face Killers, because associated with some of these deaths, there has been a smiley face, typically spray painted, somewhere near where the body goes into the water, not necessarily where the body is found. So upstream or some other place, there's some type of graffiti. And They've actually said they found 12 other identifying markings, which is not a public knowledge, but they say that they found other things there as well. But, you know, I talk about my documentary, at least a half an hour, about the occult aspect of what the smiley face represents.
Do you have time for two quick questions that I really have?
Go.
You got, okay, quick. When bodies pop up in previously searched areas, have you been able to plausibly eliminate the possibility of currents and drift in the more suspicious cases?
Absolutely.
Some of them are upstream, well, so those are obvious.
So in the case of Dakota James is a perfect example. That is somebody disappeared, I think it was a 2017 disappearance on a gay app, possibly Grindr. I don't know. I don't have subpoena power, but... on a gay app, he was acknowledged as a gay younger man and a call at going to Duquesne. Last seen, disappeared for 40 days, found in an area that had previously been searched that weekend downstream, but a normal floating object would have traveled that distance in 3 days.
All right, here's my last question.
And his body, and Cyril Wecht actually saw the body and said he had a ligature mark around his neck, which...
And he's the expert, yeah.
Well, I would say Cyril Wecht has not been... discredited to my knowledge.
Yeah. Here's the last question. If are there not an equal number of females in the same demographic also missing and found dead in water? I mean, is that just
not to my knowledge? So that's kind of the distinguishing phenomenon, distinguishing this phenomenon in all if the larger pool of people disappearing is that.
Yeah, if it just happened to random people, you would expect to have at least almost half female.
Correct. So why is it men?
Yes.
There is a strong correlation. Not all the victims are homosexual, but there is a strong correlation between that subsection of the general population and these types of deaths. So a lot of these people are on Grindr. Like Joey LaBute was on a gay app. A lot of these guys, there's associations with these gay apps, which are really dangerous, which is why I talked about Stephen Port, who is a predatory serial killer in London, who was on gay apps under a variety of different names. And really, his murder victims, he would actually go onto social media and monitor the friends of his victims and try to see if they were on the right track to point him out or anything like that. Super creepy, yeah.
Does the artwork in all the cases, does it have similar signatures or similar features?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, it's hard to say some of the artwork. I think that Gilbertson and Gannon have things that they're keeping close to their chest. But I think that a lot of them are spray painted. So there are things there. There are definitely some correlations. I think you can take away the artwork and you are still left with the same phenomenon. And
yeah,
people have tried to debunk it, but the lists are out there. There's 10 people at least researching these, keeping very detailed spreadsheets with dates, names, times, and there's probably 200 to 300 global victims in Sydney, Australia. There is like 70 people have been found in that bay, the Sydney Bay, with a higher proportion of men. And something's happened in Manchester. They call it the different name. They call it the pusher phenomenon of young men being found in the canals. There's tons of canals in Manchester, so. There is a global element. There's a real, I mean, if you look at, you can go through my YouTube channel and see my research, and there's a really good posting by a girl by the name of Elise Soper, who runs the Cryptid Antiquarian blog, and she wrote about the young men drowning in Boston alone, which, you know, a huge college town, and she had something like 2,000 hits, lots of people commenting. People were going, yeah, there's a problem. And like Zach Marr was one of the young men who was downtown and disappeared, and there's all kinds of sketchy things involved. So it's super dangerous for young men, just as much as it's dangerous for young women or anybody, really. I think one of the reasons why this phenomenon keeps happening is that the younger men don't feel like they're in any danger before they get before they get GHB'd, right? So they're at a bar, and there's a lot of like near misses. There's a lot of different stories, but I do think that if you take out all of the other aspects of these cases, because there doesn't seem to be a financial incentive at any way or any, there does seem to be some taunting on social media through texts and things like that. But really it's about, I think really about the idea, like kind of like what these men have an as an ideal, you know, as these younger, typically athletic, skinnier than even the central mean BMI body mass index that are like even farther. Gilbertson and Gannon and Duarte were on Dr. Oz talking about their show and Dr. Phil. So people can probably see those segments about the smiley face killer. So they've done a really great job. I think that where they've fallen short is not seeing the enormity of the problem and how many people have died in different parts of the country, because different parts of the world, really, because I have had these cases. I've looked at cases in the UK, Europe, and they just keep happening. So somebody's sharing information through the dark web or somehow how to talk about this technique, either through FetLife or something like that. So it's really a modern kind of killing. And I did a kind of cursory study of gay serial killers in the Midwest, or really all over. A guy by the name of Eiler, Dahmer, Baumeister. And one of these guys had 100 victims. Just incredible. Jeez. Lesser. Yeah. And so you can see all those interviews on my podcast or on YouTube. But
what's your YouTube channel?
William Ramsey Investigates. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, my documentary is probably too long, but I think I wanted to show that it's not just one serial killer. It's an MO that somehow.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. Yeah, like it's like deeply off the charts. Saddening. Yeah.
And then, you know, it's like people somehow figured out how to commit kind of a perfect crime. And that's really it. You dump them in water. People think it's a drowning. They don't think anything else. And that's
it. And it erases all the evidence.
Right. So all these other serial killers, the bodies are missing. Like, well, there's 18 missing guys, you know. But in this one, you know, you can trick the police and trick observers, I think. I think that's really what's happening. So, you know, I did one case. His name was Garcia out of Boston. And they searched this reservoir, which is a very clear reservoir, over and over. And his body just magically materialized right there in a place previously searched in a very obvious manner. Like, so where was he? How did they miss it? And they keep missing these people. And my conclusion is that they didn't miss anything. They weren't there. They're kept for a time.
Yeah.
I know. That's what's so disturbing about it.
Yeah. Super disturbing. So.
Yeah. It's creepy.
Yeah. Bad. You don't want to become a victim. I mean, people are headed off to college and school again. So I think that if I looked at all these cases, I do think there's a partial, the desire on the authorities is not to put people into fear and panic. So they're definitely not talking about it. They're not talking about it like it's a concern.
And they can square it away if they say it's an accident.
It's an accident, absolutely. So I do think that there is a phenomenon of women being GHB'd, and women are very cognizant of the fact that they can be drugged. They watch their drinks, but men don't. They don't see themselves as victims, and I think they should. Yeah.
That age, too, reckless and drinking a lot, it's definitely an easy target.
Well, I talked about this one guy who was in my documentary, that how did he key in to find his victims at 2 a.m. at bars? You know, how did he know that that was the place to go? So somehow he had figured out, either just being at bar, that men are vulnerable at that time. And he literally had two victims at the same time in his house. And he was I think he was married. Like he was outwardly heterosexual.
I'll tell you that somebody just warned me recently, because I love New Orleans, that in New Orleans, the bartenders are in on it.
Yeah.
They have little crime circles. The bartender will slip the guy a roofie. You don't think about it because the bartender's doing it. And they take the guy, rob him, take his clothes off, and dump him someplace far away. I don't know why they take his clothes off. But they take every single thing the guy has, wow. and he has no memory of it.
Yep, there it goes.
But see, the bartenders are in on it, right. so they can target you and they can drug you.
Yeah, so I think that some of these people, the bartenders, some of the victims, the bartenders were in on it, in on the drugging.
I was worried about
it. And I think that that's dangerous. In New Mexico right now, they're drugging a lot of drinks. People are waking up in their hotel room without their belongings, or even worse. So, you know,
it's
happening
nothing.
All over the world. Yeah, people are getting drugged at these bars. You got to really be careful. Anyway, so we are now at 60 minutes. Great interview. Thanks for sharing all of your knowledge. Where can people find you online? Find you guys.
Well, just the best place to go is thepropreport.com, or wherever you like to listen to stuff, go to Propaganda Report and you'll find us there.
And at Freedom Act Radio and at Monica Perez Show on Twitter.
on Twitter. Cool. And again, it's the Prop Report, and I came across the Propaganda Report on iTunes. So.
Yeah, yes, that's it. They shut down report. WordPress shut down our website, so we've had to rebuild, and we use different URLs now. So the PropReport.com is if you want to just go to the website that has kind of everything on it. But Propaganda Report is the name of the podcast on all the listening platforms. All
right, cool. And where can our listeners find you?
I am on Facebook and Twitter. So you can just look up William Ramsey Investigates is my YouTube channel. I got a ton of information about the Smiley Face Killers. That's free. And my movies are The Smiley Face Killers and also Occult Hollywood. I kind of redid that recently. So if people are interested in all the occult symbolism and numerology in Hollywood, they can take a look at that as well.
Yeah, cool. Cool stuff.
All right, so it's Monica Perez and Brad Binkley of the Propaganda Report. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot. Right. Enjoyed it.
All right, cool.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.